Hi, and welcome to the Everyone Funding Startups podcast. This week, I'm your host, Paul Higgins, and I'm joined by Lucas Biewald, CEO of Crowdflower, the leading microtask crowdsourcing platform. Lucas, before founding Crowdflower, was a senior scientist and manager at PowerSet Inc., which was later acquired by Microsoft, and also led the search relevance team for Yahoo Japan. Lucas, great to be talking to you today. Welcome.
Thanks, Paul.
Why don't you tell us a bit about how you got started with Crowdflower? You've had a background in technology management roles. What made you get into microtask crowdsourcing?
Sure. So the actual story is I was working at PowerSet, and we had a whole bunch of different data problems that could only be solved with human beings. Actually, my background was in machine learning, so I got brought into add some machine learning technology to PowerSet's search algorithm.
Okay.
But one of the things about machine learning is in order to do it well, you need to collect what they call training data, right? Examples of what you want to show the algorithm. So in this case, we were trying to build an AI to rank search results. So we wanted to show it examples of search queries and search results that were good matches and ones that were bad matches, right? So if you type in, learn about venture, Grow VC would presumably be a great match for that. but there'd be lots of sites that wouldn't, right? And so search engines figure that out by, or PowerSet wanted to figure that out by having human beings label thousands or hundreds of thousands of results, and then trying to generalize from the patterns that they found. And so, this was back before Jeff Howard even coined the term crowdsourcing. But I thought it'd be interesting to post the job online and see if anybody would be willing to come in and label results for me. And I was actually really struck by how excited people were to do these kinds of small tasks. After PowerSet was acquired by Microsoft, I thought, it would be really cool to build a company around this so that people around the world could have access to lots and lots of jobs without a lot of friction, and companies that had interesting data problems could easily post them online and get high quality results back.
So now you've kind of productized this, and what's a kind of typical case for using this kind of service now, this kind of product?
Sure. So it's kind of anything where you have you want to add records to data, or you want to dedupe or clean up data sets. One of the most common things that we see is a case that I never imagined when I started the company, which is adding metadata to businesses. So we have companies come to us all the time, and they want to find, for example, the homepage of every company in their CRM or in their database. And so, they'll send us a big list of companies. Maybe it's a consumer site that wants to, give people links to all these companies that they're showing, or maybe it's a business that wants to, maybe mine information about what its customers are up to. Maybe know if they create a Facebook account or a Twitter account or something like that. And so what we do is we just go through the list of businesses, and we find the URLs. And it's one of those jobs that, it's not super difficult for a human being to do, but no one can ever figure out how to quite automate it correctly. I'll give you just one more use case, just to sort of give you the spectrum. Another thing we've talked about a fair amount is eBay uses us to evaluate their search quality. So they'll show a query for some product and then the list of products that came up, and we'll have people tag them as good matches or bad matches. So if you search for, iPhone, iPhone 3G might be a good match, but an iPhone case would be, maybe a mediocre match. And a car with an iPhone adapter would be a bad match. Right. So automated algorithms really struggle to figure out, how these are different. But a human can just look at the picture and say, one's an iPhone and one's a car.
Yeah. And where is the crowd that are that are getting involved in these micro tasks? I mean, what's a kind of typical user from that point of view?
So they're all over the world. I mean, we're in pretty much every country with internet, but over half the people are in the U.S. And there's different profiles, but kind of the one that I think of a lot is moms. we see a lot of kind of middle-aged and older women in the middle of the country, uh-huh. in the middle of the U.S., who sort of really like the flexible schedule, have access to a computer, but not necessarily know when they have big blocks of time to do jobs for us. And they tend to be super responsible. Give us good work.
And so one of the other reasons we really wanted to talk to you, because you've got a conference coming up in San Francisco on the 23rd of October. This is one of the major events you do, right, every year. Tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So, in the early days of Crowdflower, crowdsourcing was kind of a dirty word maybe for the types of customers we were going to, because, we typically sell into bigger companies, companies that have big data sets that they need cleaned up some. And so a lot of them would say to me, Luke, you want me to take some critical piece of my information supply chain and send it to you, and you're going to send it to the crowd. I mean, what is that? Like, who is the crowd? And you know that they're going to do a good job. And so we tried to do a lot of evangelism around crowdsourcing. And so we did these great meetups in the early days of the company. We actually still do them. And they were super well attended. And so we thought, let's do something bigger and let's let's get basically get an excuse to get all the sort of thought leaders in crowdsourcing together and see what happens. And our first conference, I remember I was really nervous about it, but we invited all our competitors to really make it an industry event. And my board was basically like, Lucas, you're bringing all your competitors and all your customers into the same room and introducing them.
It's an interesting marketing tactic.
Yeah. But, I always felt that the industry is growing so fast that, the most important thing was showing companies that there really was an industry here, and that, if Crowdflower went away, they have other options. And sort of let them see the range of solutions out there and see how exciting crowdsourcing is. And so that was our first conference, and it was super successful. And it's been sort of interesting each year to kind of reflect on how much has changed since since the year before. I mean, our second conference was much more kind of mainstream. I mean, it seemed much more buttoned down. We had kind of more executives kind of coming, trying to learn about crowdsourcing, like feeling like this was an important thing for them to. Figure out. And then this year, it's much less of a focus on vendors and more of a focus on customers. I mean, if you look at our speaker lineup, in our first 2 years, almost all the speakers were crowdsourcing companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I'd love to see all the different creative things that people do in the crowdsourcing space. And I'd love to give smaller companies like a venue to show off the really interesting things that they're up to. But one of the things that I really wanted to show the world this year is how many real customers use crowdsourcing for some crucial piece of their business, right? I mean, not just like, ideating some concept that they never get around to making, but actually leverage the crowd in, mission critical tasks. And so this year we have much fewer crowdsourcing companies on stage and much more companies that do something else but have crowdsourcing as some critical component of their business.
Yeah, very interesting. So who are some of the presenters you've got coming?
We have eBay and we have Thomson Reuters and Autodesk. We have I should look at the list.
some great names though. I mean, so
yeah,
you said
so there's them, and there's also folks like, AngelList, right, which is a big, kind of, I would think of them as crowdfunding, alongside like an Indiegogo, and, so it's a really interesting mix of folks.
So companies like Autodesk, are they now kind of looking at this as more about kind of crowdsourcing innovation as well, crowdsourcing ideas as much as doing just high volume of tasks, of small tasks?
Yeah, you know, I think it all goes together. I mean, I think that, you know, there's lots of different ways to leverage people outside of your company to do useful things for you, which I think is sort of the fundamental premise of crowdsourcing. I think companies that do one thing tend to do lots of things in that way, right? Mm. And so that's why it's useful to kind of have a crowdsourcing conference and get everyone together. I mean, you know, I'm good friends with Kaggle, which is, you know, basically crowdsourcing data science, right? And so, it's very, very high-end crowdsourcing. And you know, when I talk to Anthony over there, it's pretty funny that we end up having lots and lots of the same customers. I mean, you know, we both have the same problem where our customers won't necessarily share the fact that they're working with us because they see it as like a competitive advantage, and it's often hard to get Fortune 500 companies to be forward about their vendors. But you know, when we get together and compare notes, it's really interesting to see how much overlap there is.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that companies looking at kind of crowdsourcing and these kind of tools are, you know, are worried about the value of that process being outside of their company? Has that ever come up in these kind of cases?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I think that companies that are really serious about this feel that they need to build a crowdsourcing competency, and so I look at Crowdflower as more of a platform for companies to, if they want to, build their own in-house competency and get really good at leveraging crowds of people to do useful things. Other companies are less interested in building their own internal competency, and so we have a more customized solution for those folks. So I guess the answer is we see both, but probably among the people that come to CrowdConf, they're the type that are more interested in actually, you know, building some kind of in-house expertise.
Yeah, very interesting. So, I mean, the number of events and things like that is a clear indicator of things going on in crowdfunding as well. Of course, you know, we see an awful lot of events in that sector at the moment, and I think you're probably finding the same in kind of crowdsourcing more generally. I mean, what are the other kind of indicators of growth that you've seen in this sector over the last few years? I mean, how has your the number of people involved in your organization grown, for example?
Yeah, well, you know, our organization has grown, you know, in terms of number of people and in, you know, revenue and every kind of every business metric you can think of. You know, we're about 50 people, but we try to eat our own dog food as much as possible. So, you know, I think the amount of economics that comes through our company is kind of higher than you'd expect for a company of that size of you know, those are the sort of the people that physically show up in our office every day. But, you know, I like to think of us as having, you know, over 3 million people that that we work with to get good results done, you know, all over the world.
You're one of the biggest employers in the world in that case.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. And you know, I think, you know, other sort of tangential indicators that I think just sort of directionally show there's a big movement here. I mean, if you search for, if you look at Google Trends on the word crowdsourcing, you can see it goes from a word that, you know, doesn't exist in 2006 to you know, well into the mainstream, and still growing, by the way, which shows that, you know, outside of Silicon Valley, there's still lots of, you know, open market to be educated. The other thing that I see, you know, this interesting is the, like, an explosion of research papers around crowdsourcing. You know, basically every year it seems to double when I ran the numbers in Google Scholar. But that sort of shows, I think, you know, I think people think it's important. They think it's interesting. I think it's going to have an impact on lots and lots of, you know, it's going to have an impact on our society and on, you know, the way we work and the way companies function.
Yeah, I'm interested to kind of explore that a bit more. What do you think the long-term impact on, you know, on sort of the larger businesses will be in from using crowdsourcing?
Well, I think that people will, I think people are getting more and more comfortable with using people that are outside of their organization, so that, you know, the sort of, you know, sort of a thick wall around a specific number of people that kind of come into work every day, and those are the only people that do anything productive for you. I think those days are going away, and I think that we'll see much more fluid forms of working together. Just as I think, you know, I think online reputations are becoming more and more robust to the point where you can actually get more information from the internet about someone in a lot of cases than an interview. You know, it's easy to do background checks through LinkedIn. It's easy to, you know, to find references that are off of a resume.
Clout score and things like that as well coming in.
And I even feel, you look at something like an Odesk, right? And I think that people, it's much easier to hire on an Odesk or an Elance than not, because you can see all the work that someone did in the past, right? Which seems like a much more better indicator of if they're going to do a good job than, a quick interview. And I really hope that one day Crowdflower scores, we keep all kinds of scores on people and try to, figure out who's doing a good job and a bad job. I hope that becomes something that people want to put on their resume, if resumes even exist.
And what do you think this means for the general worker, for an employee? I mean, do you think people will start to build their careers around these kind of sites and, these kind of channels to working, instead of thinking about career as starting at a company and going up the career ladder?
Yeah, totally. I think people already do. I mean, I think that people, I think for a lot of people that are doing work with us, they hate the idea of having a boss, right? You're sort of like beholden to, right? And they love the idea that, can work in environments totally flexible, and they can leave whenever they want, come back whenever they want. I think it's more natural. And I think the reason that we put in a lot of this sort of management structure is to get high quality work out of people. But I think that kind of comes from a time when it was just harder to get information about, if somebody was going to do a good job or a bad job. I think our whole hiring process is sort of based around this incredibly conservative feeling of, like, if you hire someone and they do a bad job, it can be a huge problem for your business. But I feel when that becomes, more flexible and you have more information about, how well they've done in the past, it allows you to make better decisions, allows you to make quicker decisions, which I think less overhead and waste is good for everyone.
I think that's particularly true in the kind of startup world as well, thinking about people trying to form co-founder teams and hire their first couple of employees. It's very difficult from just doing an interview to tell whether someone's, the culturally right for you, able to do the job in a new, a new sector, something that's innovative and never been done before. Being able to cut a workload down into smaller tasks and just get people working with you slowly, and then gradually giving them more and more responsibility. I think that's really interesting in the kind of startup sector as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll give you a great example. There's this company Scout that came to us when they were two people and we were three people. And they, they had this problem where they had an iPhone app, and iPhone kicked them out of the App Store because they said, your users are uploading pornography, right? And so at first they were like, literally the founders were looking through every image that users uploaded and checking to see if it was pornographic or not. And it's so crazy, right? I mean, it was too expensive for them to hire someone full-time to do it, and they actually needed they wanted the moderating to happen 24/7, right? Because your users don't shut down when you go home.
Right.
Right. And so, they came to us and we helped them out. We got them hooked up with a solution where our crowd was labeling their results labeling their images as, offensive or not offensive based on their guidelines. And at first they were only paying a few hundred bucks a month, right? That was because they were only using, they were using people, but in sort of small bursts whenever somebody uploaded something. So, they'd send us images in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day, whatever. And then our crowd would turn on and get them their results. And then, they wouldn't pay for when nobody's uploading images. Now they're over 100 people, and they're backed by Andreessen Horowitz. They've had incredible growth. I mean, we've seen it just because we're on the side of seeing all the images that get uploaded. That's just been super exciting to watch. And I think it shows, when you're a small company, crowdsourcing is great because, you don't want a full person. You want like a tenth of a person, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Then when you're a big company, you keep using crowdsourcing, or at least the type that we do, because any given day, you don't know how many uploads you're going to get, right? And it's like, you know, are you going to staff like 500 people or are you going to staff 1,000 people, right? You know, to make that change and be that flexible.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, especially if you look at those kind of industries like BPO and systems integrators and things like that, that keep such a big bench on the side just in case they get big jobs coming in. You know, that's really, you know, not the same efficiency as this kind of thing. But do you think any industries are going to be, you know, unaffected in the long term by this kind of trend?
Are any industries going to be unaffected? That's an interesting question. Maybe government? I don't know. You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, places that I think will be affected, but maybe not right away, is stuff where there's bigger privacy and security issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, there's tons of work in medical records and documents where I think we can make a huge difference, but, you know, we haven't gone in there yet because we haven't figured out how to address the security and privacy concerns.
Mm.
You know, we have some ideas, but, you know, we just haven't, we think that it'll require a fair amount of investment to get that right. And so we haven't gone after it yet. We probably won't for a while. But, you know, maybe some other company will come along and do it. You know, I have lawyers, but, you know, we've actually been seeing a whole bunch of legal crowdsourcing startups popping up. So, you know, it's tough to say. I mean, I sort of think this will be like contracting. I mean, I think that's affected almost every industry. And, you know, I think it's sort of an even bigger effect.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, from our point of view, you know, we kind of looked at the way, you know, early stage financing works and thought this is really one of the last kind of industries not to be really affected by, you know, online distribution models and accessing a crowd of, you know, potential investors or potential co-founders and things like that. And you know, I don't see any reason why that can't be, you know, why that can't make the most of these new tools, these new methods as well.
For sure.
Great. Well, really interesting to talk to you, Lucas. Thanks very much. How should people get in touch with you, and how can they attend the event as well?
Well, you know, they should email me at Lucas with a K, LUKAS at crowdflower.com. I'm really easy to find. My cell phone number is on my homepage. You know, we would love to have interested people come to CrowdConf, you know, interesting startups that have a crowdsourcing focus. We'd love to, you know, help you connect with investors and customers. And so you should definitely let me know what you're up to.
So that's 23rd of October in San Francisco.
That's right, yeah.
Great stuff. All right, thanks very much, Lucas. Really great to talk to you.
There you go.
Bye.